Welcome to the program. My name is Jim Rome. Wild day. Bucks fan. Feeling it. And we're letting them all in. Normally I say, have a take, don't suck. Now I'm saying, I don't even care if you have a take or not, and go right ahead and suck. It's your day, Bucks fan. We are coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Whether you want to buy a home or finance your current home, Rocket can. 1-800-636-8686. All right, I've shared my thoughts with you. Let's get a different perspective. We are joined by a senior writer at Sports Illustrated, co-host of Open Floor, SI's NBA show, previously with ESPN and the Wall Street Journal. He is writing a book with the working title of Blood on the Hardwood, The Flagrant History of the 1990s New York Knicks. I'm looking forward to that. Chris Herring joins me once again. Chris, it's good to have you back. How are you?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
Good, good, dude. Listen, lots to talk about and a lot of different stories from last night. But before we get to Giannis and the Bucks, I've got to get to the biggest story of last night. Where is your laptop right now, and what happened to it last night?
Lord, it's funny. They televise these press conferences, these media conferences, and on the big stage like this. I placed mine on the floor as I was about to ask a question of Chris Middleton, just not wanting to look like I wasn't paying attention as I'm being televised, you know, and not wanting to look like I'm on Twitter or anything like that. I put it on the floor as I was asking a question and then forgot to pick it back up before I left the room. And so that was probably midnight. I walked out of the arena with some friends that were going to their hotel, and I stayed at a suburban hotel because all the hotels downtown are sold out. And so I Ubered all the way to my suburban hotel about 30, 35 minutes away, got back to my room. I had a story due at 6 this morning, so I went back to go, you know, write my story up, biggest story of the season, arguably, after I've gotten all my interviews done, and my laptop's not there. And then, you get that wave of anxiety. You're like, oh, my God, I left my laptop at the arena half an hour away in a city where Ubers are not really available because, of, you know, it's a crazy night in Milwaukee. So luckily, NBA PR, you know, grabbed a computer. They didn't know whose it was, but I was able to connect with someone. They left it at the front desk of the, you know, the media hotel back downtown. But that took about an hour and a half. So I got my computer back at about 3 and, you know, had to crank away on the biggest story of the year with about 2 hours to do it with nothing pre-written at all. So it's kind of a nightmare, but the story's up online. Hopefully it doesn't read like it's too rough, but yeah, a little bit stressful.
Dude, I got to tell you something. I don't know how many people listening can relate to that story that you just told. That is wild, man. That is wild. It's one thing to lose or forget your laptop. I've done that. I've left it in like airport security and gotten on the plane and not have it. But to not have it and have to file on the biggest night of all and to go back and find it, that is a wild story. So good job. I'm sorry that you had to go through that. So then the other story, the second big story of the night, Giannis and the Bucks winning a title. I mean, there's so many places where we could start, but as you look back on that night, once you get beyond the nightmare that was the laptop, what are the thoughts that you have? What do you, when you think back on that night and that game, what are you going to remember the most?
I think it was just that they figured Phoenix out, which, you know, you watch the first two games of that series, it would have been hard to imagine that. But, you know, and this was the way I wrote the story once I got the laptop back. This was kind of what Milwaukee had worked for. You know, they'd come up short the last 2 years in really disappointing fashion. They had the most wins in the league 2 years ago. They had the most wins in the league last year. And I wouldn't say they overhauled everything, but they obviously got rid of Bledsoe. They threw the farm at Drew Holiday as far as draft picks to try to get Giannis to lock into that supermax. And then they started this season, and they tweaked their offense significantly, an offense that has been top five for the last few years. They tweaked it. And, you know, Giannis looked uncomfortable at the beginning of the season. His numbers were down. They were scoring a bunch. But, you know, as I wrote in my story, they gave up 110 points or more 6 games in a row. They had a 5-game losing streak in February, which is the longest they'd had in Giannis' tenure, basically. And they were 16-13 through 29 games. They were just an average-looking team, but they were kind of tearing stuff down purposely in hopes of really trying to make themselves able to withstand whatever would be thrown at them in the postseason, to show different looks, to try different looks, to try different lineups. And quite frankly, when you look at, you know, I think the Brooklyn series was kind of its own thing with those injuries. But when you look at that series and them coming back from 2-0 there, and, you know, having the battle to win that series, even with Brooklyn banged up, to have to really battle with Atlanta. And I think being down 2-0 here, I think there's something to be said for the fact that, you know, it didn't faze them quite as much because they kind of had been designed and kind of programmed to kind of work through this. And by the end of it all, they had more experience playing together, even with a lot of new faces on the team, than any of these other teams that they were playing at this sort of stage. And so I think that helped them. And by the end of the series, it really did feel like they just figured it out. I think they're the third team in finals history to lose the first two games of a series and then come back and win the last four. And I think that speaks volumes. And I think it should force us a little bit to rethink the way that we talk about somebody like Giannis for all the flaws that he's got. And really, I would say there's one really key flaw. And I don't think we need to make it as if he's just totally flawed. He's not a great shooter, and we know he's not a good shooter, and we know that. But if that's one of your only flaws and you could do everything else that he can do, that's a pretty damn good player. And when you look at his resume as a 26-year-old now, he made a joke last night that really rookie of the year is really the only award the man doesn't possess. And that's a hell of a thing to say for a 26-year-old.
Chris Herring joining us, my man. Like, why did you sweat not having a laptop? You could have just thumbed that out on your iPhone or dictated that into the phone. It's all right there for you. Listen, when you talk about the way we have to rethink certain things for certain people and the types of adjustments that they made, like they were 16 and 13, maybe they weren't struggling, maybe they were kind of looking for certain ways or certain things that they might use in the postseason. If we're rethinking things or people, what about Mike Budenholzer? What does that tell us about his willingness to adapt and change?
I had a buddy yesterday. He said something that kind of blew my mind. And he was like, look, if the Bucks win tonight, you know what I would do? And this will sound crazy. And I said, what? Well, Sean Powell, a really good NBA reporter. He said, if I'm Mike Budenholzer, I win tomorrow and I just quit. I said, what? And he said, there's no up from here. I mean, these fans wanted him out. The media was kind of already counting him out. You could make the argument that maybe Bucks management would have wanted him out if they lose that Brooklyn series. It would have been a really bad look to lose that series as shorthanded as Brooklyn was, James Harden playing on one leg, Kevin Durant having to do everything by himself, and you've just given up the farm again for Jrue Holiday. And we've been on Mike Budenholzer for years now about the lack of adjustment. He made the adjustments in this series right after game one. They didn't win game two, but they looked much better in game two. They won games three, four, five, and six. So, you know, if we have to rethink Giannis and the criticisms of Giannis, and again, most of those things boil down to the same criticism, which is kind of funny to think about it that way. You know, I don't know what that looks like in a modern day context where championship normally buys you a lot of runway. I don't completely know whether that's true, but I mean, let's be real here, Jim. Does anybody really think Milwaukee should be viewed as the favorite next year? I don't know what people's expectations are. I don't think people feel that Milwaukee has the best roster in the league. Even if you think that, there's a very good chance that Bobby Portis will have a lot of money thrown at him from different places. So whether you can keep this team together with the money that you've got to pay Drew and Chris Middleton and Giannis, I have no clue. But, you know, Mike Budenholzer deserves a ton of credit. If not for, you know, the way that that Brooklyn series was coached, then, you know, the fact that they were able to get by Atlanta without Giannis in those last two games, and I've certainly in this series, certainly the back end of this series, I would say really the last five games of the series, he coached his butt off.
Chris Herring is joining us. Chris, I love the way you started that by saying, I had this conversation with a friend, and then for a moment you were not going to mention the friend, but I'm really glad that you did mention him by name, Sean Powell. I love Sean Powell. I haven't talked to him in a few years. He's come on the program quite a bit. I love him. So next time you talk to him, tell him I said what's up. I'm glad you mentioned him by name. You mentioned Bobby Portis too. So yeah, he's going to have opportunities. People will throw money at him. You've spent time in Milwaukee. So let me ask you, how beloved is Bobby Portis in that city right now?
I'm trying to wrap my head around the last time, like this folk hero sort of thing. I mean, I've spent time in Cleveland and the J.R. Smith stuff. And, you know, I think every fan base has that one guy, you know, Cleveland had Matthew Dellavedova, whatever. That's one thing. I mean, I saw stuff and I didn't have a way to document it. I haven't asked questions. I guess I haven't worked on a story about it. But I've seen stuff about him having, like, the best-selling jersey over the last couple months here locally. And, you know, maybe that's that most people already have a Giannis jersey. There was a father who was hoisting his son on his shoulders right in front of me in the crowd yesterday. And, you know, the little kid, you know, maybe all of a foot and a half tall, he's got a Giannis jersey, and then his dad is wearing one too. And I thought it was just this adorable scene. But the fact that Bobby Portis, I mean, just – the volume of when they won the title last night, I feel like it was probably only equivalent to just, you know, every time they would chant Bobby throughout the game, whenever he would check in, whenever he would make a shot. And it's like something I've never seen. And I mean, he talked about what that has done for his confidence. I can't remember, you know, I'm a relatively young guy, but I can't really remember anything that was like this passionate for someone that he's a decent player. Like, he has very, very clear flaws, which is why I think you've seen him, you know, in a couple of other big markets, Chicago and New York, kind of fizzle out to where, you know, you question whether he's truly worth what he's being paid. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens, because I could actually see him wanting to stay here, even though, you know, I can't imagine that they're going to be able to offer the same money that he'll get elsewhere. So I don't know. It'll probably give him something to think about, because he's really talked about this as having kind of saved him, that he really wasn't in a good mental space, you know, with the kind of criticism he was getting in other markets. He's loved here, and it's more than a love affair, and it's very interesting to see it play out.
You know, I think Chris Herring, my guest, I think what he said, it was so real, and it was kind of raw when he said, hey, man, I was in a bad place. I was really in a bad place. I was at home. I was with my mom, and then I started to work out, and I started to feel better, and I thought that he was very, really honest and real about that. You know, you used a couple of words, Chris, I think are interesting, like that father-son deal with the jerseys was, quote, adorable, and then he's beloved here. Like, I normally wouldn't use words like this, but then I think about Giannis. And Giannis, I've never seen a more joyful or joyous assassin than Giannis, or a happier, more inspiring guy than Giannis. Like, how lucky is the league to not only have this guy, but to have this guy where they have this guy?
Oh, my goodness. If you're talking about growing the sport globally, which, you know, the league hasn't expanded in a while, they haven't had to. When you just think about just how global the sport has become, you can't get a PR email from the league without them mentioning how many countries are tuning into the All-Star game or the finals, or, you know, how many countries are represented with the reporters that are covering the finals or what have you. I mean, this is a guy that represents more than one country, who, I mean, I'm fortunate enough to read Miren Fader's book. I'm a friend of hers that comes out in a couple weeks on Giannis, and who could have better timing than she does with that. I mean, I don't think there's anybody in the league with a story like this guy. I mean, a guy that, you know, I don't want to say that he was essentially homeless, but I mean, they were getting evicted left and right. And a guy that, you know, if we want to be honest about what probably played into his growth spurt when he got to the league, was just that he was eating for the first time, you know, truly eating the amount that somebody his size really needed to eat, and really having enough to eat for the first time. He just has an incredible, incredible story. And, you know, it's funny. He's obviously humble for somebody that's as accomplished as he is. I think that he has a little bit of an ego, but it's like a healthy one. And his perspective on the game is like nothing. I mean, the guy sounds like, you know, an inspirational Twitter account or something, like a motivational speaker sort of stuff with the way he speaks. It's just, you couldn't really script a guy that comes across better and more genuinely than he does. And, you know, I don't care one way or the other who wins or loses from game to game, but I can't imagine that, you know, if you don't have a rooting interest, that you don't like this guy. And certainly if you like him, that, you know, that you're on cloud nine watching him win a championship. And, you know, maybe it makes you feel a certain way if you're a huge Durant fan or LeBron fan, but I imagine there are a lot of people that are really happy to see someone win it, who just kind of grew with one organization and didn't really go out and get a bunch of guys that were just superstar talent to come team up with them. He made light of that last night. And I think there's probably truth to that, that people, maybe that engages a certain fan that maybe has kind of fallen out of love with the NBA in the super team era. But, you know, this is a really rare sort of thing, and it's really cool to watch.
I agree with you. It is really cool to watch. He is a senior writer at Sports Illustrated, co-host of Open Floor, SI's NBA show. Also, as I mentioned, he is currently working on a book with the working title of Blood on the Hardwood, the Flagrant History of the 1990s New York Knicks. Chris, great job. Glad you got the lapper back. Glad you got that thing filed in time. Great to have you on the show today, man. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Tim. I really appreciate you having me on.
Appreciate you. Good job. Chris Herring, really good job. But what a terrifying experience that was. Great, great journo, but what a terrifying experience that would be, man. Like, if you've been there before, it's one thing to lose track of your lapper. I've done this. I've told this story. I'm not proud of it. And in fact, it's happened more than once. I've gone through security. And security's so weird, right? Normally, because you got to get your shoes off, you got to get your belt off, you got to get everything separate. You need a bin for this, a bin for that. Your shoes don't need to be in the bin, you know, on and on and on and on. And it's like, it's kind of a pain in the ass. And by the time you get off, there's so many things that have been separated. Like, I'm one of those guys who, I'm the old school loser who goes, hey, can I get a boarding pass, please? Like, I still go with the boarding pass. So that's something else I got to keep track of. And then there's the watch and the phone. And, you know, granted, you might forget something. Probably not your lapper, but I have. I know that feeling. I know the feeling of getting all the way to the gate and like, oh, boy, my briefcase seems pretty light. I know the feeling of getting on the plane. I'll tell you what I know the feeling of. I know the feeling of being in the air going overseas for 2 weeks.
No!
You want to talk moron? You want to talk moron? Imagine me going up, hey, yo, flight attendant, can we turn this bird around right now? I've got a MacBook Pro back in security. Now, even worse than being stupid enough to do that, I'm the guy who's moron enough to go away for 2 weeks overseas, true story, where I got on the plane, we're in the air, I go to log on to the Wi-Fi, only to realize I don't have the computer, and now I'm in a panic. How am I going to, oh my God, how am I going to survive 2 weeks on vacation without a laptop?
Oh my God, this is not
Well, I was not going to do that. So what I do is I go to my phone, which I did not lose, and I immediately, we're going to Croatia. I'm looking for an Apple store in Croatia. Literally, we're not on that plane 30 minutes before I'm on my phone trying to buy a laptop. And Janet's like, are you crazy? You're going to buy a new computer. I'm like, are you kidding? Before the coffee comes, I will have a new computer. She's like, are you kidding? You're going to spend all that money for a new computer. I'm like, are we even having this conversation? So incredibly enough, there were no Apple stores in Croatia where I was. But I found like an iStore or an iPhone store. I found something. But what I ended up with was a laptop with a keyboard that was not a U.S.-style keyboard, and I couldn't convert it to an American keyboard, and it had a bunch of hieroglyphics on it. And I'm trying to type. I'm literally trying to use this thing, and it's in a different language. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, I can't even believe this is my life. And by the way, it cost. It costs a lot. So I'm using this thing. I come back home, and then I'm trying to get my original one back. Do you have any idea how hard it is to get a computer back from lost and found in LAX? It took like 2 months. And I'm checking. I'm updating. I'm refreshing every day. And I finally got it. So my man, Chris, when you say you lost your laptop, I know the feeling. I did not have anything to file the way you did, but I know the feeling. It's a horrible feeling, man. I know that panic. What a moron, man. I bought a new one because there was no way I was going to go 2 weeks without a laptop. Like, how could I survive 2 weeks without a laptop?
You're a moron.
Even worse, it wasn't even a debate. Like, I decided the second I realized what I had done, I'm like, I will get off that airplane and go right to the Apple store. I'm not even going to check in the hotel. Really, Rome? Why would you need a laptop on vacation? I wouldn't. I don't know. I'm a degenerate. True story. Not proud of it. What's poppin', Twitter? When we come back, open phones for a short segment, but it's going to be short. So, who's watching your money? I'll tell you who's not. Your financial advisor. He is on the beach, sipping a cocktail, while your investments are going right into the tank. Many Wall Street insiders predict a correction is just ahead, so it's going to be your choice. Do you listen to the same old excuses from your advisor, or do you subscribe to carnivore trading like I do? See why their picks have become legendary. Carnivore levels the playing field. They deliver in real time what their experienced traders are thinking right now. Now all of us, from newbies to experienced traders, have access to their explosive trades. I do. They start hitting my phone first thing in the morning when I wake up. And for the first time, Carnivore will let you try their service for free. This is your chance to see and mirror Carnivore's explosive trades in real time for free. There is no obligation. Go to getourtrades.com. Use the promo code Rome. That's getourtrades.com, promo code Rome. Getourtrades.com. Carnivore Trading. Real trades, real time. See the website for terms and conditions. Past performance is not a guarantee of future earnings.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
So, the internet has a lot to say about Samsung Galaxy. Reddit user Jaw1073, for instance, says, quote, "You gotta look yourself in the mirror and ask, am I ready for this life? You won't be able to go back to mediocre after this." End of quote. Yeah, he said it. Are you ready for this life? Find out at Samsung.com/reserve. I'll be real with you. I've owned a Galaxy. A nice phone. Don't take my word for it, though. Ask Jaw1073, Reddit user. I got to get an ATP in here, too, because I have a guest coming up next segment. ATP brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. You want to thank O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Let's see what we got here. Hey, Senor Snag. Let's address the elephant in the room. Where's the beef segment? Signed, Clara Peller. Bruce in Riverside.
Beef jerky segment?
You know what? Actually, no elephant. And it's not a problem. It's going to come back. This is how advertising works. They sponsors will buy a schedule, or they'll be on and then they'll be off, or they'll buy an annual. Believe me, the beef segment will be coming back. Sooner than later, it is missed. All is well. All is good. It's all part of the strategic planning from the company and the show. It is a beloved segment, a beloved product, a beloved sponsor. We're still smashing as much beef jerky as we possibly can around here, especially Rit. You want a beef? I'll give you a free beef. My beef is that I don't have the beef segment right now, but it will be back. Pimp in the Box, since we know that you like your timepieces, what was the first nice watch that you purchased? Jason in Texas.
Nice.
Great question. Great question, but you're kind of putting me in a bag position, right? Well,
you see this watch?
You see this watch? All right, so there's stages, right? There, when I got my first deal, and then when I got my first TV deal, and then when I got my first big deal, I'm going to shoot you straight. The first classic timepiece, the first big swing timepiece, you know, the first really big swing that I took, I can tell you what it was. And those who know will know, and they'll get it. And then those who won't know will hear what I'm about to say and say, bleep you. The first nice watch that I purchased, Jason, was a, believe it or not, because I'm not this guy, but back in the day, this was a thing, a yellow gold Rolex Daytona. Yellow gold. And I have no yellow. I'm a white gold guy or stainless guy. I'm not a yellow gold guy. I don't have any yellow gold. That piece, though, was the very first nice piece I ever bought. And it was on a leather strap, a black leather strap, I believe. Yellow gold. And I was never a guy that ever traded watches or sold watches. I always kept them because they were so personal to me. Like if, I'm starting to digress. The thing about watches, and I'm not an Apple Watch guy either. I don't have one. I still, like right now, I'm wearing a watch. I'm an old school guy. I like timepieces. You know, to me, that's the piece of jewelry that I can wear. I never, ever traded or sold a watch because they were all deeply personal to me. And there was a story behind every one I bought. Every watch that I ever bought, there was a story behind. But that, when I took that watch and a bunch of others that I bought, and I did trade them. And I traded them for an AP because I always wanted an AP. And what I got was a limited edition Jay-Z AP. And I swapped out like four of my watches and cash for it. And I think the gal that did the deal jammed me up hard. I think she got over because I never did actually value the piece that I traded for. But I traded that yellow gold Daytona. And as much as I love the AP, I still missed the Daytona. Too much information. Watch guys get crazy, man. Watch people get crazy like that. Watch guys know watch guys, or watch people know watch people.
That watch costs more than your car.
Like, for instance, this watch I'm wearing right now. I sat down on my Showtime show once with Kevin Hart. I've told this story before. He had the same exact watch on. Kevin Hart did. The same exact watch on. The same exact watch. I said, bro, I got to ask you something before we went on camera. I said, I got to ask you something, man. Do you know how to set the date on that thing? He's like, F no. I'm like, dude, thank God. I don't even know how this thing works. I don't even know how to set it. He's like, he looked at me like I was crazy. Like, why would I know that? I'm like, dude, nice watch. I felt so good about me that I was rocking the same watch as Kevin Hart. And that neither of us knew how to set it because it was too complicated. I'm telling you, watch guys. Watch people are degenerates. We have stories. Stories. And this one, last thing about this one,
you see this watch?
This was the last watch I bought. I've not bought a watch in 6 years or seven. I bought this watch when Shared Belief won the Eclipse Award for a two-year-old male colt, or gelding, or two-year-old male of the year. I make jokes about that, too. Back when we had Shared Belief, I used to buy Rolexes. Now when we went... All right, once again, it's Wednesday, so the Jim Rohn Podcast, episode 182, will be dropping after the show. Gail Devers, a three-time Olympic gold medalist, will be my guest. She's got amazing energy. We've already done that. It's in the can. So I'm going to push that out after the program. Make sure you look for that. We are efforting Panthers wide receiver Robbie Anderson. I should have that for you momentarily. In the meantime, I have a window where I might take a telephone call or two. As I'm efforting my guest, 1-800-636-8686. Let me go to Phoenix. Let me get some reaction in here really quickly. Brian in San Pedro. Hey, boss. I've got a MacBook also. Signed Ritt. Logging all of his trips to McDonald's. Pops, you a Mickey D's guy? Obviously. Steven in Crowtown. The only thing more painful than Monty Williams processing losing the championship is hearing Bucks fans celebrating winning the championship. Yeah, that was gut-wrenching. Man, Monty, he is so classy. Great coach, great leader. As promised, we're joined right now by a wide receiver for the Carolina Panthers. He's coming off a big year. Over 1,000 yards receiving last year. That was a career high. He led the team with 95 receptions. 4,155 career receiving yards, second most among all undrafted wide receivers since 2016. Played his college ball at Temple in 2016. Carolina is going to open up the preseason against Indy on August 15th. Now you're up to date. Robbie Anderson is my guest. Robbie, it's really good to have you on. How are you?
Good, good. How you doing, Jim?
Good, man. Good. Really good to have you on the show. So we're a few days out of the start of training camp. I know you've been putting in a ton of work in the offseason, so bring me up to date. How forward are you, or how looking forward are you to getting things started and showing everybody all that work you have done and putting it into practice?
Man, I'm ready. You know what I'm saying? I don't really got too much to say, but my actions going to speak,
I got that. Something else you did say, though, maybe you can comment on this. You were talking about the sense of peace, Robbie, that you felt being with the Panthers. I like that quote a lot. Like, how would you describe the experience last season, and how good did it feel to have that sense of peace and find that right spot?
And it just felt like, I was home, somewhere I belonged to be, man. But that just makes things a lot easier when you're in a comfortable environment and things around you are comfortable and, just able to operate to the best of my ability.
Robbie Anderson joining us. Listen, you're going to get your work in no matter what, right? You're going to be a pro no matter what. At any point before finding that sense of peace, were you losing any of your love of the game itself? Love of the sport, love of the grind, love of the work. Was any of that missing?
At times, I didn't always, it was like I was supposed to be living a dream, but it felt like I was working a job. You know what I'm saying? Like, I used to feel like that sometimes in New York. Just didn't feel like that was, the right place for me. But I was there for a reason. Now that I look back, everything happens for a reason. It was a part of my journey and my growth,
Dude, that's an amazing line that you just said. Like, you were living a dream but working a job. I've never heard anybody reference that like that. You were living a dream but working a job. That's really interesting. So you're coming off a huge year, 95 receptions, 1,100 yards. I mentioned you were undrafted in 2016. Do you feel like now because you're at peace, are you, actually entering your prime? Can you get much better than you are right now? And if so, what are you going to work on?
Most definitely. I'm working on everything. Last year what I did, that was just the stepping stone. But, I know I haven't even played my best football. I'm nowhere near that yet. So, me as a person, I feel like as a man, I've entered my prime. Everything around me is the best it's ever been. So I know if me as a person is in that stratosphere, I know football is going to follow.
Robbie Anderson's joining us. Robbie, I know it'd be better to ask this guy. I'm not going to ask you the same exact question, but when you talk about the people around you, then you've got Sam Darnold. Now, he might answer this differently. I wonder if maybe he thought that he was living a dream and working a job, but he busted out and he comes in earlier in the offseason. I'm just kind of curious, how did he show up? What was his energy like? And did he seem like he was in a good place when he first walked in?
Yeah, from what I saw with Sam, like a whole new person. I remember when I walked in the building, I believe it was mini camp, the way he was smiling, just his energy and stuff. I never really saw too much. Remember seeing that out of him in New York, maybe because he was younger, a lot of pressure on him. I can't really pinpoint it, but I definitely feel like he's coming into himself too and happy to be where he is.
Robbie Anderson joining us. I remember him at USC when he was out here in Southern California, and I always remember him like that, man. He had that it. He had that energy. He had that charisma. But you're right. As a young guy in New York in a situation that might not have been great, there's a lot of pressure. Speaking of which, you've stepped it up before. As an example, when you were with the Jets at your first inter-squad scrimmage, there's this great story. When you were a rookie, Geno Smith threw a deep ball to you. Brandon Marshall described it like this, quote, "It was a jump ball, and there were just two guys on him. He just went up, and he plucked the ball out of the air like he was Larry Fitzgerald, and he did it with ease. Then he came down. He ran into the end zone. He tossed the ball with so much swagger as a rookie, and I said, holy crap, that dude right here is a baller," end of quote. That's a pretty amazing quote from Brandon Marshall. What was your mindset when you were a rookie, and then how do you show up like that and prove to everybody that you are a baller?
That was the key. I was trying to earn my keep. You know what I'm saying? I knew coming in it was all or nothing, you know, especially coming in undrafted. You know, I knew that was my shot. I had to make the most of it, and I didn't get to this point in my life to play around, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, this is a dream I had my whole life, and when it came down to football, I had, you know, I had issues off the field, but that wasn't ever football related. When it came down to me touching the paint on that turf, you know, I'm about action. So, and I came to, you know, build my legacy and make it happen. I was never really too caught up on being undrafted because I'm focused on the bigger picture, and I knew I was going to get further than just getting my name called on TV on one day, you know?
Robbie Anderson, my guest, did you not, because I've talked to you, I've done this a long time. Man, a long, long time, and almost everybody I've ever spoken to that was undrafted will always use that. They'll run on that fuel. I get that. Was that never fuel for you? Did you never? Are you not running on fuel from that at all?
I mean, after like the third round, I didn't really want to be drafted no more, you know. And honestly, like the money I made, like I would have made like on a signing bonus, you know, I made that back on player performances, especially since I was undrafted. So. That was never really like, I just wanted to get my foot in the door and, you know, play ball. You know, I didn't really, was never too caught up on that. You know, it caught me off guard. I didn't think I wouldn't have been, but it didn't, like, obviously, like, depress me or, like, end me or nothing like that, you know. But, like I said, my vision and my goal was always the bigger picture, and it still is.
I get it, dude. I like that. Robbie Anderson joining us. So there's this perception, right, that if you run a great deep route, that maybe you aren't caught up in the details of route running and everything else, but Joe Brady, your offensive coordinator, raves about your ability to run routes, your ball skills, and everything else that goes into being a great all-round wide receiver. Do you take pride in those details? How important is it to you to be known as that guy?
You know, it's very important because, you know, I'm a receiver. I'm not a track star, you know what I'm saying? But I mean, I don't really know when that whole little thing came out about me being a deep guy, because that was my role that separated me. But I still, early in my career, like my first 2 years at the Jets, I caught plenty other type of passes. I think it was like my third year, maybe the coaches kind of developed that type of persona about me and kind of categorized me like that. But you know, I've been playing football my entire life, you know what I'm saying, and running all type of routes and catching the ball and making plays. So I was just happy to come to Carolina and had coaches that, you know, want to call things up to let me go out there and play ball.
Yeah, that is right. Like labels, right or wrong, true or false, fair or not, man, they just stick. Whether they're right or wrong, they just stick. Let me ask you about this. I saw you posting on Instagram that you were at UFC 264. I'm always fascinated, well, one, by UFC and MMA, but other athletes and their sense of it. Like, what was that experience like, and what did you make of what you saw when you were there?
Oh, you know, I like to be around, like, places that's, like, you know, big things going on, and be around, like, people that are bigger than me, because it motivates me, and it also shows me I'm in the right direction of my life, you know what I'm saying? And then, two, you know, watching, like, when I go to, like, events like that or like concerts, you know, I observe and I try and learn like things like that, and they kind of like seeing those people get into their element, you know, it kind of excites me and things like that, and then just seeing how they attack things from their professional level and things like that.
I think that's really interesting. Robbie Anderson joining us. So one more thought, like the offense last year, the names, some of the faces have changed, but you had four guys on the team that had more than 1,000 yards from scrimmage. And Christian McCaffrey only played 3 games last year. Knowing that, how explosive can this offense be this season?
Well, I think sky's the limit. You know, it's just a matter of, you know, us making it happen and keeping it simple. And I think definitely with C-Mac coming back, that's only going to help us more.
We're going to see how it looks. It's going to get started once again on August 15th. You've got a preseason game, and it's against Indianapolis. I mentioned Robbie Anderson's coming off a career year, led the team with 95 receptions over 1,000 yards. My man, good to have you back on the show, Robbie. It's good to get caught up. Appreciate you. Appreciate that conversation. Let's be sure we do it again soon.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it, Jim. Stay up.
Appreciate you. You stay up, man. Appreciate you. I like talking to him so much. I like that energy, and I like... When you talk to somebody and you get 3 or 4 different, like, wow, that was a cool answer, or I've never heard a question like that answered that way, that's a good thing. And when that same guy ends the interview by saying, stay up, I'm really happy. That's how you close the show. Robbie Anderson, undrafted out of Temple. That point about two, yeah, I didn't really mind that I was undrafted. In fact, after the third round, I didn't want to be drafted because I got all these performance bonuses and all these other things that went into it. It caught me a little bit off guard, but I was fine with it. Good conversation. Huge call brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. They're close, they're convenient. They're known for guaranteed everyday low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people that you can trust. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store today or visit O'ReillyAuto.com. Bucks fans, congrats. Enjoy it. If you didn't get through today, we will do more of the same tomorrow. My thanks to Adrian Phillips of the Pats. Great interview. Chris Herring, SI, great interview. Robbie Anderson was a great interview. Another great interview dropping shortly, the Jim Rome podcast with Gail Devers. Be sure you look for that. My thanks to the XR4TI. Have a great day, clones. See you tomorrow. I'm out.